On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. One way or another, the votes will land tomorrow, and we will soon know what the midterm election verdict is for Washington. Democrats cleaning house or Republicans hanging on? Much of the campaign debate has been about accountability for what's gone on. War, scandal, deficits, division. But after tomorrow, the way ahead will instantly loom large. Tough war choices, yes, but also choices on wages, taxes, health care, and much more. Up next on Point, we'll look at the national agenda post-November 7th. If Democrats win, if Republicans win. Plus, a conversation on the price of the guilty verdict on Saddam Hussein, and whether it was worth it. To midterms and their aftermath, we start in Chicago with Jill Zuckman. She is chief congressional correspondent for the Chicago Tribune. Jill, thanks a lot for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
First, to the latest polls off the weekend, the president's stumping. The Democrats are still hanging in there with their hopes. What do you see in this apparently, supposedly closing gap?
Well, not surprisingly, in the final days of the election, people are paying more attention. And so what the polls are showing us is that the races are tightening, and they were already pretty tight. But what Republicans are very excited about is they're seeing some polls suggesting maybe they're not down as far as people had thought initially in terms of these sort of macro questions of, you know, do you want to change the Republican Congress to a Democratic Congress? Would you rather have a Democrat than a Republican? These are sort of big picture questions as opposed to specific candidate questions.
Jill, voters right across the spectrum are very sensitive to being manipulated in these last couple days before the vote. The Saddam Hussein sentencing, these polls coming out now. Do the polls look, are these independent or are these party polls?
Actually, they are mostly independent polls. I mean, there's a Gallup poll and a Pew poll. There's an ABC News poll. I mean, these are not just that the Republicans are flacking their own polls. While plenty of that is going on in individual races, the discussion is about these larger independent polls.
So something more like a horse race here, though the gap still remains with the Democrats out front nationally, though it's all decided vote by vote here. Jill, we're looking at what these two parties would do, depending on who gets a majority where after tomorrow's vote. What's formally on the Democrats' agenda? What have they said publicly about their top items if they should take a majority or majorities on Capitol Hill?
Well, the Democrats have a nice little pamphlet called 6 in 06. They kind of lay out their agenda in a number of different subjects. You know, first on their list is they want to raise the minimum wage. They have a whole bunch of things that they want to do right off the bat in the first 100 hours.
Not 100 days, but 100 hours.
100 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not. They say we're not messing around.
Okay.
Some of these things are easy to do, and we can do them quickly. You know, another thing that they would really like to do is expand the research into embryonic stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there are extreme limits on what scientists can do and what can be federally funded. Congress came close to removing those limits this past year, but the president gave it his first veto, and there wasn't enough votes to override it. I think if you see a change in the House and more Democrats in the Senate, you may well see this reversed.
They're talking about negotiating on the price of drugs under Medicare, talking about cutting student loan interest rates. What about taxes? There's been a lot of the president talking a lot about that this weekend, said they will raise your taxes. What do the Democrats say?
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it when you say they will raise their taxes. What the Democrats don't want to do, they don't want to extend the president's existing tax cuts because they don't like them. They think they go to the wealthiest Americans. And if they were going to give tax cuts, they would do it in a different way. But, you know, there's no telling whether they would do their own tax cuts or just allow President Bush's to die.
And what about on the GOP side? Is there a clear agenda going forward if they hang on to both their majorities?
You know, the GOP is just struggling right now. I mean, they had a very difficult year this past year. They started off saying, we're going to do immigration reform, we're going to do Social Security reform. They weren't really able to do much of anything there. I mean, Social Security died, even though the president is talking now again about bringing it up this next year. And on immigration, the only thing they were able to do was pass this bill that became law creating a fence, but nothing broader than that. I think they're a little stuck right now about what they do legislatively next year. Primarily what they're running on is, hey, you don't want these Democrats coming into power because God knows what they're going to do.
Given the scare that Republicans have had in this campaign season, is it possible we might see more bipartisanship, that it might be a move to the middle in the works here?
Well, I think what we're going to see is more. We have to make some assumptions before we can say that. Let's say the Democrats win the House. Let's say the Senate goes 50-50 or something close to that, and you have your lame duck president. What's going to get done? I don't think the president's going to sign. First of all, it's tough to get things through the Senate because the minority has a lot of power to block things. You need 60 votes most of the time. So the House can pass all of these great things they're talking about, but they're liable to get stuck in the Senate because I don't think the Republicans are going to say all of a sudden I want a minimum wage increase. The president could potentially start vetoing more things. I think there might be one place where you could see some bipartisanship, and that might be on immigration, because it was House Republicans, House conservative, or some House conservatives who were really taking a very hard line, very opposed to what the president wanted. So if they're out of power, the president, the Democrats in the House, Senator McCain, Senator Kennedy in the Senate, they could all cut a deal and potentially get some sort of broader immigration bill through.
So there's the beginnings of a look ahead. Jill Zuckman, thanks very much for helping us lift the curtain a bit here. Thanks for joining
us. You're welcome,
Tom. Jill Zuckman, Chief Congressional Correspondent for the Chicago Tribune. She joined us from Chicago. Now, to look deeper at the morning and the 2 years after the midterm vote, we turn to Washington. E.J. Dionne joins us. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, syndicated columnist for the Washington Post Writers Group. E.J., thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be with you always.
And joining us from Washington, Matthew Continetti. He's associate editor at the Weekly Standard. Matthew Continetti, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
EJ, first to you. What do you see at the top of the pops for the Democrats if they get it? Does it matter if it's one House or two? Does it matter what the margins are? What do they need to begin to do what? What do you see on the other side of tomorrow, presuming a Democratic victory?
Well, first of all, I guess I take the old-fashioned view that more power is better than less power, so two houses are better than one. But I think what's really critical to Democrats is if they need to take at least one House. I think that the amount of turmoil inside the Democratic Party, if they fail to take at least the House of Representatives, would be staggering. I've joked that they'd all take a charter plane to Jonestown. And I think that is going to happen. I think that these polls showing tightening are probably correct. I have yet to jump on the bandwagon that says the Democrats are going to win 35 or 40 seats, even though some very smart people think that. But I think at this point they go into Election Day having come very close to securing at least 16 seats in the House of Representatives. And I think there are two things that are really important about there are two important things the Democrats have to do. The first is to realize that there are really only two alternative coalitions, majority coalitions in the United States right now. One is a Republican coalition that tilts heavily conservative with a small chunk of the center. Mm-hmm. The other is a Democratic coalition which includes the left or the liberals, but a very significant part of the center. The Democrats can't win without the center. And Democrats have torn each other up in the past by saying, well, we got to move right or move center. What they need is a coherent sort of center-left policy that can unite those wings. And I think they have some of that around, especially around core economic issues. I think you see it around health care and changing the prescription drug benefit. You certainly see it around the minimum wage. These proposals they have to expand student loans, make tuition tax deductible. What they've really got to do is say that Democrats are capable of taking some practical steps to deal with people's economic unease. And then the other part of it is, if Democrats control, say, only one House of Congress, they're not going to have the power to do a lot of this stuff. And in many ways, they're simply preparing the argument for 2008, when the country is going to make a fundamental choice about direction, center slightly left, or staying with the conservative side. Just one last thought. If I were Nancy Pelosi, which probably, lucky for her, I'm not, I would look to a couple of the more moderate Republicans, people like Mike Castle of Delaware, Jim Leach of Iowa, who's actually the last of the real liberal Republicans, and offer them something inside some subcommittee chairmanship, because Democrats need to convert people. They need to say to middle-of-the-road and even slightly liberal Republicans, this old Republican Party is not your party anymore. And I think they could use this Congress to push along that conversion process, which you're seeing already on the ground in many parts of the country.
Matthew Continetti, we're going to go to a break in just a moment here. So before we go to what the Republicans' agenda might be, let me just get your take on where this campaign stands at the moment. This tightening has been talked about over the weekend, and yet we've seen this huge Democrat lead for weeks coming up to this point. What are you expecting tomorrow at this point?
Tom, it's a good bet in congressional races to ignore the generic ballot. Look instead at voter enthusiasm and presidential approval. Of course, presidential approval extremely down, continues to be. Voter enthusiasm, on the other hand, some of these new polls show Republicans becoming more enthused about the election. That may equal some Republican, not gains, but holding on election day. My guess is probably not.
We're joined from Washington by Matthew Continetti, associate editor at the Weekly Standard, author of The K Street Gang, The Rise and Fall of the Republican Machine, and by E.J. Dionne, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, syndicated columnist for the Washington Post Writers Group, author of Stand Up, Fight Back. Matthew, we were just beginning to get in here. I guess, Matthew and E.J., let's just go down a little bit of a punch list here. First of all, on the war. We've talked about it from the Democratic side last week, what they might do differently. Matthew, first to you, for the Republicans on the other side of this election. There's the war. What do they do?
Well, Tom, because of the structure of American government, there's really not a whole lot Congress can do to influence foreign policy, especially once a war is underway. The Democrats, of course, many voters expect the Democrats to come up with some type of timetable for withdrawal from Iraq. But even if the Democrats were to pass something like that in the House, it'd be very difficult to do that in the Senate, and Bush would probably ignore them.
But
so
what about the GOP?
On the Republican side.
But if they hold on to both houses, yeah. I mean, they could hardly be more compliant than they've been. There's a lot of talk about this Jim Baker Iraq Study Group proposal coming out soon. Do you see Republicans ready to stand up and lean towards some significant change in Iraq?
Well, yeah. I mean, I do believe that there will be a change in policy going forward, Tom. But the point is, it will come from places like the Baker Commission. It will come from outside the administration or from the administration itself, with probably the resignation of Secretary Rumsfeld if the Democrats capture one or both houses.
E.J., what do you see? If the Republicans hang on to both, if the Democrats get in with one or two houses, how do you see Iraq policy likely changing or not?
Well, see, Matt is right, obviously, about the constitutional structure, and that the president can, in principle, do what he wants unless Congress is willing to cut off the money for the war, which I don't think Democrats want to do. On the other hand, I think this election has already sent a very, very clear signal, and my hunch is that after this is over, a lot of Republicans are going to become increasingly critical publicly of the current approach to Iraq. People like Senators Lugar and Warner, who always had, particularly on Lugar's part, some doubts about this policy going back to the beginning. And the voters themselves, I think, have registered intense dissatisfaction with what's happening in Iraq. Everywhere I've gone, and I suspect it's true of everywhere Matt's gone, I won't speak for him, people are just very angry that things are such a mess there. The doves say this: it was stupid to go in. More hawkish voters say, why aren't we doing better? Why didn't we have a better policy? Why didn't we have enough troops? There's almost no support for the actual policy in Iraq. And so I think, you know, people say President Bush is stubborn and he can go forward and do whatever he wants. But if he begins to run into, as I suspect he will, opposition not only from the Democrats, but also from within his own party, that's got to have an effect on the policy. And I think it strengthens the hand of the Baker Commission, because if they propose a substantial change in direction, I think you could see a stampede of both Democrats and Republicans saying, you bet, we've got to figure out the best possible way to disengage ourselves from Iraq over a period of time.
But, EJ, voters are listening today, and they're deciding, if they haven't already, how to vote tomorrow, Republican or Democrat. So for that set of ears, what do you see as the difference? If Democrats get a majority or two majorities, or they don't, clearly it's going to be a cooperative dance, or has to, the Congress, as you say, cannot act on its own. But the difference likely to ensue between this decision going one way or the other, EJ?
Well, Senator Carl Levin made a statement last week that I don't think got enough coverage, where he basically said, look, a vote for the Democrats this year is a vote, A, against the current strategy in Iraq, and B, a vote for gradual disengagement. And he didn't put a timeline, although he may have actually talked about within a couple of years. So I think voters who vote Democratic tomorrow know that they're saying, we're fed up with this, it's a mess, and we've got to figure out a way out of there that does the least possible damage to the U.S. and Iraq.
Matthew, we've heard over the weekend some neoconservatives coming forward from this forthcoming Vanity Fair article and saying, this is a mess, this is not what we intended. We're looking forward, but is there an accountability question even on the right here? Do you see Republicans interested in holding to account an administration that some conservatives are now saying has very badly handled this war?
Well, I think that's what this election is about, accountability, a repudiation of Bush policy, the way it's being conducted. And this speaks to, I think, also the problem that the Democrats are in. On the one hand, you look at the polls, you see that Iraq policy, the lack of a clear victory in Iraq, is the overwhelming issue shaping this election. Bush approval on Iraq policy, it's in early double digits, around 20%. Mm. It's pathetic, actually. But at the same time, though, if that sense that atmosphere drives the Democrats into power, they're really not going to have much to be able to do to influence that policy, I think. And that's why you already see kind of a shift in direction toward these more small bore issues, things like the minimum wage, lobbying reform, the negotiation of prescription drug prices directly with the companies, the government negotiating. So that's what you'll have on the domestic front. Paradoxically, a foreign policy disaster in the eyes of voters is going to lead to some domestic reforms.
Matthew, turn to another one that the president cites and Republicans a lot over the weekend, taxes. What do you see there if the Republicans hold on, if the Democrats come in? But Republicans, most of all, they've got deficit problems. What are they going to do with the tax issue?
Sure. Well, as of now, Tom, of course, the Bush tax cut scheduled to expire around 2010. So there is some time there. If the Republicans hold on to the both houses or even one house, you will have bills brought up to make those tax cuts permanent, probably closer toward the 2008 election, of course, trying to shape that election as well. If the Democrats gain control of either House or both houses, I think they're not going to address actually the Bush tax cuts. I think they're going to ignore those. That's what we get from John Conyers anyway, early signals. Instead, they're going to look toward more middle-class tax cuts, writing off college tuition, things of that nature.
EJ, what do you see from the Democrats on taxes if they gain one or both houses?
Well, the as Matt says, most of these don't expire till 2010. In fact, it would be very difficult for them to affect them in the short term. I think there's one very important outcome on taxes, which is efforts to repeal entirely the inheritance tax on very large fortunes, or what I like to think of as the Paris Hilton Relief Act, those are going to fail. And I think what you might see is Democrats putting forward a plan to keep the inheritance tax, reform it, exempt most Americans from it, but keep it for people with large fortunes. The other thing I think you're going to see is a movement toward tax reform with Democrats and I think some Republicans saying, look, the Bush tax cuts are a mishmash of special interest benefits to energy companies and to other groups, plus enormous cuts in taxes on the wealthy. And the only way we're going to avoid deficits in the future is to have a fairer tax system that can raise enough money. And so what I think you're going to see is tax reform that actually could cut taxes on less well-off people while raising them on better-off people. But I don't think you're going to see that happening in the next 2 years. I think you're going to see the beginning of an argument saying we have to reform our taxes and reform this fiscal mess.
The beginning of an argument that, like many others, will no doubt aim at 08, and we'll talk about that. I want to begin to bring our listeners in. Mike is calling from Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I have to say that I used to be an optimist, but over the past few years I've turned quite pessimistic. And I do not believe the Democrats will win any House. I believe that's all flack. I am a Democrat myself, but I just don't have that much faith in the country. And I do believe that Republicans will continue to have the majority, and when that happens, we'll just continue to see a degradation of our environmental laws, wearing down of our civil rights, and, you know, fill in the blank of all the horrible things you can think that I think are going to happen.
Boy, but you got a bleak picture going on there, Mike. Does it look as bleak as all that?
Well, I'm one of the the people in this country that Republicans like to attack. I'm gay. I've got a partner of 7 years that I'm not allowed to marry.
Uh-huh.
I'm in a blue county in a red state, and, you know, things are bleak for me anyway, unless Democrats get in. And even if they do get in, I don't see them doing anything to fix that.
Let's look at the two that you raised there, and thank you for your call, Mike. EJ, Mike looks at the environment and civil rights. First of all, he doesn't see a Democrat victory coming, but either way, he says he's not optimistic about change on the environment and Civil Rights, Patriot Act, and the rest, I guess.
First of all, there's a lot of pessimism that's been built into the Democratic Party. My wife has been saying exactly the same thing for the last 2 days, anticipating the Democrats can't win. And I think there is a terrible sort of, there's a depth of this pessimism that isn't matched by reality. I mean, Bush lost the popular vote in 2000, forget mm-hmm. all the controversy about Florida. They won two elections in 2002 and 2004. It's not like we are at the end. Imagine what Republicans felt like at the end of Franklin Roosevelt's long reign.
I'm looking at headlines here about gloomy Republicans, but we've got Democrats saying down so long it looks like up to me.
Right, but it really isn't that long, and I don't think that you have cemented. It's almost like Democrats have started to believe the Republican propaganda that they've cemented a new majority, and I don't see that new majority cemented. What I see happening this year is a very large middle of the electorate abandoning the Republican Party. The Republicans are really doing very badly among moderate voters, are doing very badly among independent voters, and part of that is that such voters are not at all happy with very hard-line stances on social issues such as gay marriage, whether a lot of those folks are actually for civil unions, and they really don't take to politicians attacking gays. It's not in sort of their fundamental political outlook to want politics to be about that. They want it much more to be about practical things. So that, call me too optimistic for the Democrats. As I say, I don't think it'll necessarily be a blowout, but I will be very surprised if they don't take a House tomorrow. I suspect, again, I'd like to ask Matt, will he be surprised?
No, EJ, I won't. I did a count last Friday. I got up to about 22 seats gains. Of course, the Democrats need only 15 to
right.
take over the House.
Right. And
I'm an optimist in our office. Of course, Bill Kristol, my boss at the Weekly Standard, is predicting a 35 seats gain for Democrats.
And this is deep in conservative territory.
And this is about as conservative as you can, or certainly neoconservative as you can get.
Let me ask about the agenda issues in Mike's question. EJ, first to you, on gay marriage, what, if anything, would the Democrats do if they gained the House and or Senate?
Well, I think the answer is nothing, which, compared to passing a national marriage amendment, which would restrict the rights of states to do anything about gay marriage, would be, in quotes, progressive from a gay point of view. What Democrats involve, most Democrats say, I'm against gay marriage. More and more are starting to say, well, maybe I can be for it. Well, a lot of Democrats are for civil unions. I think what you're going to see on this debate is a long progression where a lot of states are going to move to give gays and lesbians the core rights of marriage, perhaps by declaring civil unions, and then over time opinion is going to flip on this simply because there is no issue which is more conditioned by people's age. Young Americans are much more sympathetic to gay rights than Americans over the age of 65. That's not surprising. We've had an enormous change in attitude on this question over the last 30 years. And I think that's simply going to continue.
Matthew Cotton, let me ask you about if the GOP comes back with both houses here, will they move ahead in the 110th on federal legislation on gay marriage, do you expect?
I think we can expect the Senate, certainly in the Senate, to bring up the federal marriage amendment again. I wanted to take a little broader point of view, though, Tom, on mm-hmm. Mike's question. You know, the pessimism, he's a Democrat who's pessimistic.
Right.
But for me, when I travel the country, when I talk to voters, cover these races, the pessimism is much more general than that. It's the independents who are pessimistic. It's even Republicans who are pessimistic. We live in a pessimistic age. What that speaks to me, though, it's we're about ready for a major turnaround. And that is because at the end of the day, to my reading of history anyway, is Americans prefer optimists. And so they might not see many optimists in the 06 cycle, but I think going forward in the 08 cycle, starting next year certainly, those optimists will start to emerge and the voters are going to flock to them.
Well, we spoke recently with Barack Obama. He certainly plays that more optimistic tune. But Matthew Continetti, what about that pessimism? If it's right across the board, left, right, and center, do the Republicans own that? Is that in itself something that they will be held accountable for? I mean, they've owned Washington for a while now. If everybody's so glum, will they pay for that?
The Republicans are the majority party. This election, I think, is a referendum. Certainly the Democrats want to view this election as a referendum on the majority party. Here's why people are pessimistic, at least in my view. It's because of Iraq. It's because there's no clear victory in Iraq. It's because now we're more than 3 years into the war, and we have the same problems in Iraq that we did in August and September 2003. And so that lack of a clear victory in foreign policy is influencing our domestic politics and the atmosphere here at home.
And that could get worse before it gets better. Judy's calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, Judy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
A little bit more optimistic point of view, I hope.
All right.
What I'm hoping is that if the Democrats get control of the House, that a lot of discussion that's been submerged by bills staying in committee and bills being negotiated by just the Republican Party when there's compromises between the House and the Senate, all that stuff might become more open to discussion and more bipartisan in its point of view.
So that's process, bringing a more democratic process and atmosphere back to Capitol Hill itself. EJ, how about it? Do you see more daylight?
God bless Judy for that note of optimism, and I do think that is very likely in two respects. One is, first, you're going to have some accountability with the administration. You'll have serious hearings. I don't think, you know, Republicans say Democrats will go nuts. It'll be hearings 24 hours a day on stolen paper clips. It's not going to be that. It is going to be some serious accountability on mistakes made and perhaps and corruption issues that have been raised. But also, I do think you're going to have you're going to go back to the old-fashioned way of writing bills, which is with hearings, which is to air issues, which is to look for some kind of solution that might last beyond one party-controlled Congress. And I do want to agree with Matt on something. I think his point about optimism is absolutely right. Ronald Reagan stole optimism from the Democratic Party, which had a near monopoly on it, except maybe for the Dwight Eisenhower years, for a very, very long time. Right now, Republicans sound very, very gloomy. Bill Clinton, by the way, stole optimism back. And I do think that Americans look for someone who says, we've got a lot of problems, but we can solve them, as opposed to someone who says, gee, these problems are going to overwhelm us and there isn't much we can do. So I very much believe that people like Judy are the right kinds of people to be running as candidates in the next cycle.
Of course, the next cycle is 08. Matthew Continetti, we've just got half a minute here. If you think optimism is what's going to work, does that mean less divisiveness, less polarization? Are both sides going to be obligated by voter tastes and desire to get off the division wagon a bit?
Well, polarization, Tom, is an ongoing historical process. The paradox of it's not going to stop with this election. The paradox here is, as a new paper by the Brookings Institution points out, even as polarization is continuing and this great ideological sorting of the parties takes place, business gets done in Washington.
Sort of.
People might not like the business, but it's getting done.
Right, sort of a stripe. We'll see what they think of it in the vote tomorrow. Matthew Continetti at the Weekly Standard. Matt, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
And E.J. Dionne, Washington Post columnist, author of Stand Up, Fight Back. E.J., thanks for joining us.
Thanks to you and to Matt.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.